Thank you for watching RGCWV Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. I am your host, Luke Hersey, and with me tonight is Alex McLean and Mike Mallow. We are all longtime Final Fantasy friends and longtime Final Fantasy theorists. And because of that, we have a lot of things to talk about the new game, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which, as Mike has put it, the meat and potatoes of the Final Fantasy VII game. I kind of agree with him. I didn't think about it until after he had mentioned, but it is actually my favorite part of that game. Yes, the last act is very good, but this middle act is so, so fantastic. So, we definitely do want to talk about it. For the viewers, we are going to do a non-spoiler section, which will be the first little section of the video, and then a spoiler section, which is the actual theory talk and the talk about the actual game and how well they did throughout. First off, out of a 0 to 10, where would you guys put the rating of this game? Alex, go.
Oh, you know I don't like giving things numerical ratings.
You can give love it or grades.
Yeah. You know, right, this isn't the greatest game of all time. 8 out of 10. Like, it's darn good.
Okay.
I am someone who is very generous with my ratings. So I will give it a 10, but I would not consider a game necessarily that doesn't have its flaws. But for what it does, I, like, as far as me being entertained and the enjoyment I got out of it, that's a 10.
Okay. I know I didn't say it before, but I think I'm actually going to make my grade multifaceted, and you guys can go back and do this as well. But I think in consideration of how much work they put into it, the musical score of it, the graphical nature of it, the story writing of it, and the excitement that I got while I was playing this game, both in cutscenes and in the actual battle system, I'm sorry. Alex, I think you're wrong. I think this was a 10. I think that the...
Let me give my reasoning
actually,
here.
You know what?
Let me give my reasoning here. Okay, Baldur's Gate 3 is a 10. Elden Ring is a 10. Tears of the Kingdom is a 10.
And I'm glad you mentioned all of those, because I would put this game on the same level as those.
Okay.
Not the last one. Mm-hmm. Not Remake.
Yeah.
Rebirth. Rebirth.
Oh, yeah, this game is bigger. You know, I'll give it nine.
Okay. Nine I will take.
My justification is that I gave Remake a 10 also, mm-hmm. and so this is better than Remake in every way, so it'd be weird not to give it a 10.
Combat system was better. The
cutscenes
were better.
World was better.
I mean, just because it was on the PlayStation 5 makes it look better. But I don't care about that right now, especially in consideration of the review. I'm reviewing the game. And the game transcends graphics. It transcends how it runs. If I'm having fun playing it, then it deserves the letter that I'm giving it. By the way, Alex, before you say anything, an S tier is an 11.
Okay.
And this is not an S tier game. This is not an S tier. This is A plus plus. It does not break that S tier.
Agreed.
So now that we have that out of the way, I will say that talking about the musical score, because I talked about the musical scores a minute ago, I actually took my nice speakers off of my computer that had a subwoofer, basically 2.1, 3.1, I don't know what it is. Some 0.1. 0.1 speakers that sound fantastic, and put them on my TV just for this game. I disconnected it from my computer to put it on my TV. God, that sounded the musical score was already great. Was already great in the original, and this just, they had to bring their A game, and they totally did.
Yeah, I would say that the remake made some questionable choices as far as music, but like, I think this game went like 100%. I bought the soundtrack as soon as it came out. I was like, nope, I gotta have this in my ears at all times.
I was blown away by how many small things get their own theme song. There are like just individual side quests that have their own theme song, and they're bangers, all of them. That like the Stamp the Dog theme, yeah. Like,
which is not on the soundtrack.
Oh, it's not?
Not on the iTunes version. I hear it is on the Japanese version.
Yeah, and I mean, just there's so much detail that like in that side quest, there's like the Stamps theme remix, and then there's the Stamps theme action version whenever you get into combat. And it just goes in and out of this, and it just flows so much. You know, and there are several of these, and they're just fantastic.
That's the thing I noticed on the soundtrack is there is the theme song for wherever you are, and then there's a battle mix, and then there's usually a boss battle mix also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right back to back on the soundtrack. I was sold the moment that... Solemn Gus came out, and like he had his own theme song. It was like a funk thing, and I was like,
"Oh yeah!"
I was like, "Nope, I have to." The soundtrack is it. I don't care what the rest of it sounds like. Everything up to this point's been perfect.
Like many people, I was annoyed by Kyrie. A lot of people think she's an annoying character, but when she got a theme song, and it's like this bubbly J-pop thing, like I'm delighted by it.
I will say that I hated Kyrie. but Same. One of the things that I will say that I hated even more, talking about soundtrack, the Cosmo Canyon theme. Every time that I was getting into it, they added that extra little like techno-y sound in front of it, and I'm like, no! This is supposed to be a natural sounding, like, actual orchestra sound, and they ruined it. That was as far as everything else in the soundtrack, fantastic. But that right there, the Cosmo Canyon theme was, yeah.
I was listening to that again.
We're getting too much into the details, but it's yeah, fine. Yeah. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about before we move on to the next piece?
Go all out, little Stamp. Fight for us, little Stamp. Come on.
Wow, 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 wow.
Okay, so graphical style. I want to hear you guys' thoughts on graphical style in comparison, not to its previous, but to other games on the PlayStation 5, because this game, it surpasses the last one. It surpasses the last one. But I want to hear Mike's thoughts on this first.
I actually thought the character models, when you move around the world, seemed a lot more stilted than the PS4 version. Like they especially in their faces, like they seemed kind of fakeish. And I've seen a lot of complaints about that online too, but I noticed that without online complaints, that they seemed a lot more fake than what they did in the remake on the PS4. Now, that said, everything else was gorgeous. You know, they nailed the graphics for the world and everything.
Now, what do you think about the performance versus quality mode? How did you play? Let's ask that question first.
I play for quality, although I'm having some I've had some PS5 issues with it overheating and shutting down, which is a whole thing I won't get into. But I kind of went back to performance just to see if that helped it along. So I kind of went back and forth, but I had to do the same thing for Final Fantasy 16 too. So
that one's a heavy hitter.
Yeah, I don't concern myself too much with that kind of thing. I'm just there for the world and the story.
So in terms of Final Fantasy, I'm glad you brought up Final Fantasy 16. In terms of Final Fantasy 16 versus this Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth, I think that 16 looked better. I think that 16 was more fantastical. It looked, it was just a great looking game. However, it was more restrictive. However, this, it wasn't as open as this one is, and so there was a lot more liberties that they could take. So I really feel like they did as really as good, they walked that tight rope very well, and I think that they made the game look as well as they could have.
On the subject of graphics versus performance mode, see, I don't have a 4K TV. My TV is 1080p, and I think the only thing that's gained in quality mode is the 4K resolution, because I tried. I took screenshots, compared them side by side to see what, if I can find the difference in like ray tracing or shadows or stuff like that. And like, I think I do have a pretty good eye for that kind of thing. I could not find a difference,
right?
Like whatsoever. Just, I don't have the TV for it.
Okay. So maybe buy a 4K TV if you're playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
I juggle it around in my head sometimes.
Do you have a 60 frame refresh on that TV?
Yes.
Okay. That was my other question on that. Okay. So, I mean, in terms of graphical quality, there is definitely some drawbacks that can be had. A lot of people are making the argument that we don't need a PlayStation 5 Pro, but, I mean, some people are pointing at this and arguing, yes, we do.
I'm primarily a PC gamer. I want both. Like, I don't want to have to pick between 60 frames and high fidelity. I want both.
Yeah, and that is the thing. That is the thing. I've always had a lower end, mid-range PC, so that has always been my trade-off, though. So it's always been not even 60, usually 45 frames in 1080p.
Not to toot my own horn, but this machine's pretty beefy.
Oh, that was a fan.
It's also that.
It's also a space heater.
It is.
Okay. So, story beats. And remember, this is, we're doing a spoiler-free section. Overarching story. What do you think as far as in terms of how well they did versus this section of the original?
It starts in the right place. Like, you know, in the original, you go to Calm is the first town you go to. You know, it's mind blowing just how small these things were in comparison in the old game. And they seemed so big back then, but it recreates that. It makes it as big as you remember it when you were in high school. Or at least that's how it feels to me.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I think that there was changes. There was changes, and I'm not going to talk about them. But the changes that I think that they made, for the most part, made it better.
Yes. I don't think there was a single story change other than the obvious that I was like, I wish they hadn't went that route. No, it was all, a lot of it made things more clear or made things more easy to comprehend.
I think that there was a few one-off side characters that had like one little teeny scene in the originals that they gave like actual like a full story for. Like, for instance, and this isn't really a spoiler for anybody that played the original, the Chocobo Sage. He was just the one-off guy that they had for 2 seconds in the original, and they gave him a whole section, and they made it make sense. They weaved him into the story that they established way at the beginning of the game. So just that right there. And they actually even the Chocobo Sage even wove back to the rebirth. So I and that's just one example. That's just one example. And
I was going to say, another good example is Johnny, who I actually, until after I played Remake, I didn't even realize he was in the original game. And not only is he in the original, he's got lines and everything. I'm
I
like,
didn't know that either.
How did
The
I miss him
original
before?
or the
first one?
No, the OG, like he actually leaves Midgar when you're I think going into like Aeris area
I don't remember
or
that at all.
and then I believe he does turn up at Costa del Sol in the game. I think he may actually own an inn in Costa del Sol, like in this, which we won't talk about just yet. But yeah, he's there because I saw someone mention online, then I went back and played the beginning just to see it, and sure enough, he was there. I don't feel so bad now.
That
go
I
ahead.
want to reiterate something that Luke said of like they made it make sense. I do think a lot of the mysterious storytelling of the original game was at times absent and,
Dumb.
dumb. Like they made some dumb parts less dumb.
Right.
There's a lot you got to do to make all those mini games work, story-wise.
Oh, can we talk about the mini games?
So many.
Okay, so let's not talk about the elements of the story of the mini games, but I will say that that was one of the things that I loved about the, let's just call it what Mike just called it a minute ago, the OG. So the oh, original game. The OG, it was chock full of mini games. And that was one of the things that I actually compared other games to of being the Final Fantasy VII of this. For instance, my favorite Zelda game, Twilight Princess, in my opinion, is the Final Fantasy VII of Zelda games because there's so many mini games in it. There's the snowboarding, there's the claw shot mission, there's the floating down with the chocobo into the, or not the chocobo, the chicken into the lake and everything. It was just there was a bunch of mini games, and it reminded me so much of some, one of the elements that I loved about Final Fantasy VII, the OG.
If anything, my complaint is that there was too many mini games in this. Because every time I found a new one, I'd be like, "Come on, guys, you didn't have to go this hard." But I realized too that the original's like that. I played from the ancient city to the meteor the other night, and there was like two or three mini games just between there. I was like, "Yeah, I guess that's a good point."
It did get a little much sometimes. Like and that's a common complaint of the game is just like, they made a mini game out of this. Like, because they did add things. There are they everything that was in the original, it's here. But there's more than that, and some of them are
Then you got
I will say that the mini game, the one that I thought was the, oh my gosh, guys, you didn't have to throw in another one, was the frogs. The
Oh
frog. The frog
yeah.
leap. I mean, it was okay, but I was like, you don't need another one. We're good. We're good.
Now, at the same time, some of them, especially Chocobo Racing, another game developer would have made that into a standalone game and sold it
Sure.
for like maybe a little less than full price. Like there are a whole lot of games with much less depth to them, much less, content that sell on Steam for $40.
I thought that about
Just
Queen's
Chocobo
Blood.
Racing. And Queen's Blood. You know, there,
I pay $20 just to play just that for however long.
I kind of hope they do.
If Queen's Blood yeah. doesn't become a mobile game after this, it's going to be a huge
mm-hmm.
wasted opportunity. And I don't even think that they need to even if it can be. I think that they could make it free and make it free to play and put microtransactions in it. Because a great example is Marvel Snap. Marvel Snap, I haven't spent a single dime for, but you can spend a whole lot of money for it, but you don't have to. And I think that they could use that same system for this. But yeah, I think Queen's Blood's fantastic.
Yeah, there are a whole lot of games on Steam out there, hundreds and hundreds of games that have less content in them that run for $20. They have less content than Queen's Blood. Just one recurring mini game throughout the game
that had a story, a really that had good a story.
I didn't think it was going to have talk a story. About the story.
Let's not talk about the story, but yes.
So that is just mind blowing to me that this game contains whole other games. You know,
my final review of it is that they didn't have to go that hard, but I'm cool that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So one of the things that I really felt all the way through this game was there are several pieces of art. I'm not even going to say just games. Several pieces of art that when you play it, when you watch it, when you see it, when you hear it, it is clear. It is a passion project. And this game has lost Square some money in the long term, or in the short term, sorry, in the short term. In the long term, I think they will make bank off of this game, much like the OG, okay?
A remake.
I think that this is Square's, the entire development studio, Square's passion project, and I think that it you feel it through every tone of the game, through the music, through the graphics, through the gameplay, through the mini games,
and the minutia, the background details, just the small little things that you'd have to look to even see. Like there is a lot of love and care put into every facet, every inch.
There is, and just because of that, not even the length of time of the game, you know, because I'm a big dollar an hour type of gamer that if I didn't get a dollar an hour out of the game, then I better have fully enjoyed it, you know, like, oh, I can't even think of a game right now. Oh, like Guardians of the Galaxy. It was a 20-hour game, and I fully enjoyed every moment of that. This one, I had 100 hours in it, and I fully enjoyed every single second of it. I would have been glad to pay $200 for this. Square, please don't get any ideas. I will say that I did pay $100 for it, but it's because I got all the physical goodies that went with it.
I put about 120 in, and so, okay, a lot of that was I replayed a lot of the Muscle Tower, the fights, you know, or Musclehead Coliseum, that's what it's called. I replayed those a lot because I just like to just do the battle system. I just want to fight stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And that is the last element that I really wanted to talk about, and we'll just use this as a segue. The battle system. How the hell did they make what was a fantastic battle system in remake even better?
I wish they had incorporated elements from 15. Mm. Like with Noctis 15? And Ignis and all them.
Yeah, okay.
That like a lot of that we had the team up things, but they felt contrived. And I remember in 15, they seem so fluid. They just flowed right into each other that you feel like you're playing a team of four people. And this, not so much.
True. I do get that. However, the ability to use your teammates even outside of the sync attacks was actually nice too. Like, for instance, when you were Aerith, you could use the bodyguard mechanic. And that was cool. That was cool to be able to just have somebody come and be defense for you while you're casting a spell. That that seems logically how an actual fantastical party would be made up of. If that makes sense?
Yeah. It feels organic.
Yeah.
I do like how when you're fighting, they like the entire like party is there, but like most of them just kind of like off to the side, like cheering you on, basically.
Uh-huh.
pretending to fight.
How much did you freak out the first time that you could you actually realized that you could send a backline of command?
Mm-hmm. If you got a couple of people down, or even one.
Yeah, you're down to one person, and you're losing the battle, and then you can. I mean, that's why it's there. Turn the tide of the battle that you're going to lose to do a backline command, because those guys are there.
I didn't know you could do that.
What?
No. Well, maybe you didn't get beat up that bad.
I did it right to the end.
Are you just that good?
I'm not terrible, I don't guess. I did throw it on easy towards the end, though.
So, after talking about all this, you guys stand by your review? You're not switching it up to an 11? Alex, you're not switching it to a 10?
10 is my maximum.
Yeah,
9 is not a bad review.
No, it's really not. It's really not. In fact,
that's what IGN gave.
I mean, yeah, well, IGN gave Helldivers a 9. Mm-hmm. And that was why I bought that. By the way, fantastic game, but we can talk about that a different day. So, I'm going to say that this is the end of the spoiler-free section. Thank you very much for listening to RGCWV, Random Geek Culture in West Virginia. I hope you enjoyed this, and I hope you watch more. You can hit like, subscribe, and even share this on any social media garbage platform that you decide to share it on. Leave a comment. Send me a text message, 304-566-9777. And now, welcome to the end.
Welcome to the end.